Hi, Bobby Halton here for our sponsor, Unimac. Hey, Unimac wants to remind you to take care of your crew with the most complete PPE cleaning solution in the industry. With washer extractors built for maximum performance tailored to NFPA 1851 standards, simple record-keeping capabilities, and free training for your entire firehouse, it's no wonder that Unimac is called on by fire crews across the nation. Check out Unimac at unimac.com/firecrew.
Hey, welcome to Fire Engineering's Hump Day Hangout and to our show, Issues and Challenges in Today's Fire Service. I'm Chief Rick Lasky, along with my very good friend and Hump Day Hangout co-host, Louisville Assistant Chief Terry McGrath. And joining us is part of our regular cast of characters, Chief Scott Thompson. Chief Bobby Halton is traveling. He's in New York. He might be with us. I'm thinking he may not, but he might pop in there. And Chief John Salka is actually teaching at a conference. They rearranged some things, so he was supposed to be with us, and they backed him up class to class. So Bobby and John will be with us next month. Before we get going, because we've got another great show lined up for you today, folks. First of all, let me just get to this. Join us is our very special guest, a good friend, Paul Watleton. Paul is from the Burlington, North Carolina Fire Department. He's got over 20 years experience in the fire service, is currently the battalion chief of training with Burlington. Burlington operates, we'll have him talk a little bit more about it, with 105 members out of 6 firehouses. And we'll get Paul to talk a little bit about, he wears several different hats there, like so many people out there, gets a lot of things done. What do they say? We run the good ones hard. And he's the author of several articles, very popular articles with Fire Engineering Magazine. We'll get him to speak on that as well. Real quick, as a reminder, if you have any questions, zip over to Twitter and send them our way. Our producer, Pete, will be looking. I'll be checking as well. Just make sure you had hashtag FE Talk for our show. But before we go and dive into our topic here, we've got a great topic for you. And I want to throw this to Scott and Terry. We've had two good guys pass away recently. Retired division chief Kenny Wilkins from the Louisville Fire Department, who worked with Denton County, and I think was it Murphy or Wiley, Scott, afterwards?
Murphy.
Yeah. Murphy.
And when I got to Louisville 2000, he was the acting arson investigator, and they were in the process, Terry, if you remember, of taking the whole thing away, giving it to PD, and he was very vocal when I was there visiting that he wanted to keep it. Anyway, long story short, we kept it and we promoted him to division chief, and he did a great job with it and kind of laid the floor plan for when Terry moved in there next. Terry McGrath, our good buddy, moved in there next and took that division even further. Kenny passed on, and we want to wish his family and his loved ones our best. Very, very, very young guy, and a very, very sad loss. He passed on. It was an illness. One of those where, it kind of takes you by surprise, even though, he wasn't feeling good for a little bit, I guess, we'll miss Kenny. And Kenny, you guys had the services for him the other day, correct? Right.
Yeah, they were held down in his hometown is Hawkins. It's down close to Tyler in East Texas, and he had moved down there. They lived he lived there with his wife, and for anybody who knew Kenny knew that Mark Lee said at his funeral. He said, he put my name in there too, which I'd appreciate, but he said Kenny was always a thorn in his side, and that's kind of how he went through life. But it was a fun thorn to have. That guy was a hoot. And I was talking to somebody down there at the funeral, and of course it's sad because he was too young. He shouldn't have, it's not the natural progression of things when you look at his age and whatnot. But I will tell you one thing, Kenny left nothing on the table, man. He got a life full of adventure, and I think he got up every day and got his money's worth. There's no doubt about it. So. Yeah, he was a he was a good guy. And you know what, Chief, it was good to see when you walk in and there's a lot of people and kind of an overflow capacity and there was a lot of people there from a lot of different places. And so he certainly had some reach and touched a lot of people.
Yeah. And you say, you always knew where you stood with, you know, there was no surprising. There was no surprises. You didn't have to guess what was on his mind. And you're right. I mean, as fire chief there, he was a thorn in your side, but not the kind that you hated seeing. There's two differences. There's some guys you go, oh my God, you see him coming and go, what's he going to be complaining about? Whatever. But you know, the other thing too, Kenny fought for what was right too. And, I'll tell you this, with some people, whether he liked you or not, if you were a good person, he just differed with you on opinions, he still had respect for you, you know, and, that's a big loss.
At his service, Chief, and this was, the last alarm's always a tearjerker and always really kind of sombers things up pretty heavily. But his daughter is a dispatcher in Grapevine, and she did the last call for him.
Oh, wow.
So it was definitely moving.
Well, thoughts and prayers are with the Wilkins family and loved ones, and Kenny, we'll miss him. And then Terry and Scott, we got to take just a couple of minutes to talk about Roland. Number two for Jody, right? In Denton County.
Well, actually, Jody has moved up.
Okay.
He's over Roden Bridge or something. I don't know the hierarchy there, but I think Roland actually stepped into what Jody's just right.
Scott, oh.
Right. He stepped into that fire marshal and director or the lead over emergency services. But Jody had kind of bumped up a little bit. So, and he's been in that capacity for a couple of years now, I think.
Well, then Roland, Acevedo, I always say it wrong, but I mean, he had a long, nice storied career in the Metroplex there with Highland Village and Coppell and then Denton County, and was instrumental, you know, and really working through some things. But Terry, I know you were very much involved with the vaccinations and coordinating everything. And we lost Roland the other day too. So just back to back.
They were great friends. They were very close friends for a long time, which is interesting.
And I'm just, you know what, we lost two good guys. So God bless them both. And like I said, we wish our best to their families. So we're gonna move into our topic now. I mentioned Paul, our guest, today's topic is one that's not strange or foreign to this group or to what some of us do on some other shows about the role of the pump operator. And we put the subhead in there. We'll be discussing the vital role the pump operator has in a successful fire attack, but it's going to go beyond that. Real quick, before we jump into that absolute topic, Paul, give us a quick rundown. I wanted you to do this. I got your bio, but the articles that you did, the title, with fire engineering, and then, what was the message you were trying to deliver with those?
Yeah. So, Chief, first of all, thank you for the opportunity of being here with you all, and condolences to the family of those individuals that you just mentioned. It was more of the recognition thing, the recognition of the position. And when I saw the need of it and I reached out to Chief Alton and asked him, what type of acceptance would that get, if I were to do a piece on that. And he said, hey, man, let it roll. So, I started putting down my thoughts and discussing, the ins and outs, the overall responsibilities of a pump operator, from the in-house, inspection of the apparatus, thinking about the overall safety of the safe arrival of the crew, all the way down to, protecting the nozzle person. And, we all heard that saying that there's a difference between a lever puller and a pump operator, So, thinking about the in-depth preparation for that and just like I mentioned earlier in our conversation, a lot of people, we're all famous for talking about the nozzle. We're very technical on the, water mapping and, GPMs, GPS, gallons per second. And we really don't put a lot of stress on, what's providing that and how accurate we need to be on the other end of the hose line. So just the overall, you know, the title of the article was Fire Ground Pump Operations Mastering the Panel. But the concept behind mastering the panel is not necessarily standing at the panel. It's the overall responsibilities of the position.
Well, in a good way, it's almost misleading, the title, because when I, you know, when I read it, I was like, all right, mastering the pump. And it's the first you would think is, okay, someone's gonna be talking to me about flows and this and when to do it, switching over and all that. And it goes so far, and it's misleading in a good way. You know, it goes so far beyond that to cover all these things that are just so important.
Yeah, it almost started that way, Chief. And then when I started backing out, the overall recognition of that position, you know, nobody gets into fire service to be a pump operator. Nobody gets into fire service and says, you know, I can't wait to be a captain. I'm looking forward to that. Everybody wants to be the firefighter. And, you know, as you progress and move up through the ranks, you know, there's many people that are actually scared of that position because of the responsibility that goes along with it. I mean, you know, like you mentioned a few minutes ago, you know, you could be the difference in a successful fire attack and a successful extinguishment.
Absolutely. I mean, that is the difference maker. And I was just going to, real quick, Paul, point to Terry and Scott, you know, the Colony and Louisville, two very busy departments, fire duty wise. And, you know, Scott, you've had some tough fires. You get fires all the time, but some tough ones lately, even, you know, one with the Mayday. And Terry, you had a good third alarm just the other day, and you know, you guys both are bumping out. If you're not doing your own, you're running to everybody else's. But Terry, real quick, you know, the difference maker the other day, what was it like? You said like a she shed that got going and got both houses going. I know you went to three bells on that. For Louisville to go to a third alarm, for our viewers, for Louisville to go to a third alarm, it's got to be a pretty significant incident, because you guys run. I used to say the reason they're so successful at fighting fires is because they bring a lot of people, a lot of water to the scene, and they run a lot on a one alarm, and they run a lot on a working fire on a second alarm. To go to a third is like, okay, there, you know, there's got to be either something else going on or whatever. But Terry, you briefly touched on the importance of that first due engine pulling up at what they had the other day.
Yeah, so 100%. In that particular fire, it started as an outside shed. They weren't zero lot line homes, but when you put the shed between the houses, it's pretty much zero lot line between the sheds and the houses. But anyway, it caught the primary house, and then it caught the neighbor's house. So it had progressed to a point that the fire was well developed in both structures, but we actually split those. And when we got enough companies on scene, we were able to split them. We actually took one fire off of our channel 4. We went to channel 5. All of that worked well. But the timing of what we're talking about today, and as I look back and relates to that fire, there was a lot of challenges those guys faced that day, and they did a phenomenal job. You know, everything wasn't perfect. And my philosophy in life is that this is an extremely chaotic profession, and our job is to manage the chaos and do it as efficiently as possible and don't hurt anybody. So in that particular case, there was a lot of challenges. So first in crew, just to add to that, Chief, first in crew was engine 2. They had left the station already with a driver and a captain on the engine. The firefighter was driving the dive van because they were headed to dive training. So they responded to this call with the guy driving the dive van, who parks two blocks away to keep it out of the way. But of course, he's got to scramble now and get up there. And so the timing, the sequence of everything was off. The first line to come off of that engine, now that driver operator has a lot to do because he doesn't have a firefighter there readily available to help get that line in place. So a lot of challenges. But when we look back, and of course it's easy to come back and walk, you know, when I got there, the first thing that I noticed when I turned the corner, because I always try to come in, I know the most traveled path, and I always try to snake in back way because I don't want to park two blocks away and walk. But while I'm making my way, they had laid a second line. So somebody really heads up, knowing that we had two, you know, the shed plus two houses, laid a second line, which we would like on every fire. But the problem was that particular stretch was going to be a long line. And for me, especially in some parts of this town, when you get to that 500 mark, that 500 foot mark, that makes me queasy. And so we always preach and always advocate, hey man, stick an engine on that plug when you're getting to that 500 foot. And so, and that particular functionality didn't happen. And, you know, we brought that up in the post-incident review to say, hey, just these are the things you got to keep in mind. Anyway, that engine that laid that line, they laid it proactively. And it wasn't just in short time when we split and went structure fire here, that engine was put in play because the initial engine had was kind of at its capacity as far as lines that were coming off. And so anyway, it was a lot going on and a lot of people. We also had people that jumped into this apparatus operator. And I appreciate what you're saying about being that master of this. But in this particular fire, sometimes you have somebody that maybe they're so in Louisville, we ride everything. One day a firefighter could be on an ambulance, the next day he's on an engine. But it's not uncommon to walk down a street and somebody look at you and go, hey, I need you to pump that engine. Well, he didn't check it out that morning. He didn't come in with the headspace going, this is my role today. His role that day was something else. But at a moment's notice, he's pressed into that. So the muscle memory and the ability to think on the fly to get to our overall goal. And everyone did a phenomenal job the other day. I did want to just, and because I've used this analogy before, but I was watching one of those documentaries on them landing Marine One outside the White House, and the guy was practicing. He was checking another pilot off, and he was checking. They were doing the whole approach and showing all the different footage and angles. But when he touches down on those little 2x2 or 3x3 piece of wood or whatever that the wheels actually land on. So I'm sitting here thinking to myself, I wonder whose job it is to put those out there, right? Because you don't hear anything about that guy, right? It's the same thing as apparatus operator. That dude flying the helicopter's most visible dude on the planet. President gets in there and he's waving thumbs up and, you know, all of them, he's doing the cool stuff. It's the cool, sexy stuff. But somebody had to put that piece of wood out there and he had to put it in the right spot, because that dude flying that helicopter ain't successful without him doing that job. And that's what, when I read your article, that's what my thought is about that apparatus operator. He's an unsung hero, but guess what? Things go to hell in a handbasket if that guy doesn't have his stuff together and is very, very engaged and proactive in what he's doing.
Well, and you know, we often refer to him, and you heard me, I actually do a program, series of, you know, programs under this heading, the silent heroes. And in there is our dispatchers, our administrative staff, our shops, the mechanics, and our chaplains. And the driver operator falls right into that, because again, just like you said, Paul, you hinted towards it earlier, you know, I think sometimes, Scott, and I'll go to you, it can be intimidating for a lot of young firefighters, because when they hear the word hydraulics, you know, right, you know, it's like knots and hydraulics. Guys like, oh, we got a knot drill, sucks. We got hydraulics. It can actually be overwhelming till you get the guy or gal with some time on that has a way of explaining things to you that makes sense and helps eliminate that fear. And I had one of those people do it for me. That's like John Salka's engine company book. You know, it's one of the best books, if not the best book in the business, on engine company operations. And he just has a way of breaking things down. You know, his whole thing, Scott, you've heard it before, Terry, about, you know, what he asked. So what are you flowing an inch and a half? 100. What do the math. 1.5, you know, 150. What are you flowing, what, you know, inch, three quarter, two. He goes, don't get all wound up over all this other stuff. And I wanted to, before Scott, you jump in here, is touch back to what you said, Paul, about the lever pullers. You know, there's a lot of guys that's they're just hoping that water comes out of the end, you know, and those are the people that are in love with automatic fog nozzles, because automatic fog nozzles is just a lazy pump operator's nozzle, because you can put anything through it and it looks like a decent stream with crappy GPM. And that we learned that horrible lesson in Philadelphia, One Meridian Plaza. That's why they changed the standard in 1993 regarding, you know, PRVs at high rises or standpipes. That incident was, you know, 91, but 93 is when they actually changed the standard. It's more than just pulling knobs, you know, and I want to get to, I want to actually back things up here in a second, Paul, for you. And before we even get to a fire, let's talk about the preparation and the knowledge. And, you know, our good buddy, John Salka, says you can't be into part of the job. And Scott, Terry, you remember he talked about when engine 48, with 48 engine in the Bronx, he was a captain on there, and they were doing, you know, just, they've never done under 6,000 runs a year. And I remember riding there when they were doing 8, 9, 10 plus fires a day, easy, you know, I mean, sometimes, a lot of times more. And when they started doing EMS, when the fire department, Giuliani rolled EMS into the fire department under the umbrella of the FDNY, and they started training them, and now the engines are going to start running, you know, first responder calls. They were out of their minds. We're going to miss jobs. We're going to miss fires. And he's like, yeah, well, we're missing them. Yeah, 72 is going to get them, right? But when they're running their EMS calls, we're going to get theirs. And the whole point, if you remember, guys, what he said was, he goes, what's 48 engine? We're the best. We're the best in the city. We are the best in the city. You know what? We're the best at fires. The best. Well, you know what? We're going to be the best at EMS too. And you know, John always jokes he's not a big fan of EMS. I am, but he's not. But you can't pick and choose what you can be great at. You're either into the job and you're great at all of it, or you suck. I'm just saying, you've heard me say before, people who aren't passion drive success. If you're going to drive and you're not passionate about knowing that rig backwards and forwards from top to the bottom and knowing how to do things and how to get it to where you're going and get it back safely, and that you're not just driving people, that their lives are in your hand, whether you roll the rig, smash into some intersection, hit a car, a bus, whatever, you know, where the water actually comes out of the end. We all talk about losing water. Oh, losing water. Why do we lose water? You know, the importance of that while you're inside. You got guys, but there's so many things we just blow off on the importance of the DO. Scott, you guys are a busy fire department, and I know, you know, your whole background of training, pretty much your whole career, you know, you've always been a teacher and a mentor. I know what they do in Louisville, that everybody's trained in the next level. If you're a firefighter, you're, you know, eventually you're trained to be the driver operator, because everybody's a driver operator, and every engineer is, you know, you may not use him or her as a captain, but everybody's trained at level, you know. And we'll jump back to Paul here in a second. We'll get, like I said, back to step one, or, you know, but Scott, the importance in the colony with your driver operators and being into the job and being into what they do.
We just talked about this recently with a couple of fires we had. And I think a good part of our water system is like made out of paper mache or something, because we're breaking stuff constantly.
The glass water mains.
Oh, they are. But what we're finding out is our operators really got to be problem solvers. I mean, we rely on them for so many things, but just when we talk about our fires afterwards and we focus on that position, all the things that they have to deal with but overcome, it seems like their scope is the greatest. I mean, the incident commander obviously has got a lot of things to worry about, but you see the person running around that's anticipating what tools the guys are going to need inside, making sure the lines are flowing, going over and checking this, establishing permanent water supply. So it, you know, it's huge. And we spent a lot of time in Louisville, as you know, really mentoring and developing that position, because it is vital to the, you know, if the driver doesn't get it, the rest is just interesting. And so, yeah, it's we spend a lot of time on it here. We put a lot of prestige in that position. I mean, obviously, it's a promotion, but the skill level, and we want much more, like you say, than just that guy who's hoping that he gets water. We want them to understand what they're doing, but be that problem solver that when something goes wrong, and they really understand. I think the driver operator probably understands the tempo of the fire ground better than anybody. I mean, I think their position, you know, they're active, but they get to see a lot of things going on. So it's just a tremendous a responsibility that pays great dividends when you have a good one. And not to mention all the other things they do as far as helping run the firehouse and be that company officer's right hand man and so forth. But we in Arlington, we put a lot of emphasis in the second driver program. And I think if you ask somebody, you know, what's Arlington Fire Department's training really known for, it was their second drivers program. And it was something that we invested a ton of time in. So it's obviously something well worth putting that time into, because it's that important.
Well, and I think, Paul, one of the things that I think people can grab, one of the many things to grab out of like that one particular article is not just mastering the pump panels. First of all, the very first step is mastering the attitude of the driver operator. You know, mastering the attitude that you need to have to be successful, because like I've said before, you can't be great at anything that you don't love to do. You're not into. You're just going to suck at being a driver operator, and somebody's going to pay the price. You've got to be into it. You know, it's not just I want to drive. You know, everybody wants to drive. Can I drive, Chief? Can I drive? Can I drive? Can I drive? I drove in my other 13 departments. Can I drive? Can I drive? Can I drive? You know, and they all want to get up there and take the wheel and take off, but some of them don't even know what's in the compartments on the rig. You know, you see them. You know, it's the fire drill time, open and closing doors, looking for stuff. You know, and it's that whole this, you know, when it comes to the line, instead of knowing what should be setting, you know, you should already, first of all, I've never understood if you've got, let's just say you're riding on your bumper, Paul, and you've got, let's say you have a 100-footer with an extra 50 feet underneath it on your bumper load. A lot of guys have that bumper load. They have 150 connected, and they have another 100 foot if you want to extend a little bit. 200 foot, maybe pre-connects cross lays, maybe one a little bit longer. The back, maybe 200 feet of 2.5, hopefully with a smooth bore or vindicator, not a fog nozzle. And then you got, you know, some other things. How do you not know if you had two 200 foot cross, how do you not know what you're supposed to pump them at? I mean, I'm just, that really doesn't change my 200 foot cross lay. Well, today, Paul, it's going to be 125 here, but I need to pump it at 170 or, you know, one or eight. I'm just saying, but let's go backwards. The very first step about the attitude, and then, you know, what you to be into the driver operator successful, you know, the attitude and the training that goes into that.
Yes. I mean, you know, first of all, you have to have a troubleshooting oriented, you know, brain, because, I mean, you know, the position looks like probably one of the easiest on the fire ground when everything works perfect. I mean, you know, water comes out of the nozzle, fire goes out, everybody's happy. Yeah, I think it's being able to accept that challenge and understand that things are not always going to be perfect. You know, you're going to pull up and it's going to be a cap missing on the hydrant. A ball valve is going to be stripped out on the pump panel. You know, you lose your water supply. How to overcome those adversities and take those challenges and embrace them and use them as learning opportunities. One of the biggest downfalls about it is you're operating by yourself. You don't have anybody with you to bounce ideas off of. You have to be that troubleshooter. You know, some don't take it as far as we do. Maybe, I don't know. One thing that we do is, in order to realize you have a problem, you got to know what right looks like. So, I mean, you know, only little things. I mean,
I like that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you need to know what your normal oil pressure is on a truck. You need to know what your normal engine temperature is, because it's naturally going to rise when you're running high RPMs.
And let me interrupt for a second. Terry, you and I talked about this. Those of you know that, you know, in the city of Wichita Falls, they've had a transit system here for like 100-something years. They used to have horses pulling trolleys and all that. And with COVID and a bunch of other things a year ago, they ended up shutting down service to certain areas because they didn't have drivers. And I was like, you know, long story short, we saw an old lady that couldn't get to where she's going to get her to Walgreens, to the Walmart. So I ended up driving her, and I felt so bad. I, you know, and Terry Buscabo, I started working part-time, you know, as a transit, a bus driver for the city. And I'm telling you, I told Terry this, I think I told you, Scott, when I went to take, you know, my CDL, the part you need for driving a public bus, I actually put together an article. I just haven't sent it to Diane yet. It's, if you think checking your engine out is a big deal, come do the pre-check I have to do on a bus. And they stand there with the DMV, and you, I mean, you have to talk, you have to, it's like you have to have x-ray vision to know what you need to be describing to them. And the things you have to check, I'll be honest with you. I have never checked a fire, and I was good. I was good when I was into the job. I checked every tool, every appliance, but I didn't check half the stuff that you have to check when you do your pre-check for that. I mean, it was just amazing, you know? And again, some of these guys, they walk out there, they put their gear in a compartment, they start up where all the red lights work and the siren, and make sure the tank's full. And then they just kind of, if you're lucky, they gaze in a compartment to see if stuff kind of looks like it's there. So I was just getting back to what you said about, you know, it's huge. Knowing and being, having the right mindset that this is not just pulling out onto the apron, you know.
Don't y'all think the apparatus operator has to be the most disciplined person in your fire station? When the tones drop, of course, especially like around here, man, when that one, we have a different tone for one alarm we have for other calls, and one alarm tone drops, what do guys do? They start hooping and hollering, and we got fire, and they're running. And so the environment changes drastically. The level of energy and excitement and adrenaline is dumping. And that dude driving that engine's got to stay dialed in. He gets behind the wheel. Of course, now pull out of station, you see a header. Now what happens, right? So now we've upped it more. Now he's driving a 60,000 pound, you know, something, 60 miles an hour up a roadway to get where he needs to be. Well, of course, now we're hitting intersections. And of course, we don't want to be the last thing because we don't want RIT. We got to get there and fight fire. And so, but with every step of the way, it's getting more intense. And you know, some of this we do to ourselves, but that guy's got to stay focused and dialed in. Now, when he gets there, right, fire dude gets out, he grabs his tools, takes a line, he starts stretching, whatever. It's a singular focused task we're going to do a 360. We're going to stretch a line. We're going to hit a hydrant. We're going to do all these things. But you have an assignment, you have a job, and you're focused on it. You get it accomplished. But that apparatus guy, the driver still got to figure out where he's going to stop. He's got to make sure he's out of the truck's way. He's got to make sure that he's putting his guys in the right spot to get compartment doors open, or where's the best place to stretch lines from, or if I'm looking for an FDC, or, and he's doing it while the entire time on that headset, people are just doing this between dispatch, giving you radio information. And once he gets all of that dialed out, now you're going to do math, right? And figure out, all right, so it's, I need pressures in. What do they got? They got a 2.5. And oh man, they pulled a Cleveland load. And how many sections was that? And how many sections of 5-inch I drop off of? Anyway, there's a lot going on. And everybody that's served in these roles knows it. But that person has to be extremely disciplined.
Well, and it's, it goes back to like what Paul was talking about, and Scott, we talked about, well, like your background. You know, all, for number one, I'll go back to the attitude, then the training. You know, the, I think, you know, if you have the right attitude, then you take on a training. And now it's like you said, I need to know my rig from backwards. For, you know, I've been to some places where people check, they'll check the whole pumper in like a half hour, 45 minutes. I go, that's impossible. There's no way as a single operator, you could have, let's say a volunteer department, you could have checked every air pack, you could check every fluid, checked every compartment, make sure everything with the motors, you can't do it. You're lying when you check that stuff off. So being able to check that rig from the front to the back, from the top to the bottom, make sure every single thing works properly, and you have everything on there you need to do your job. Because like Paul, when you get there, now you're not be going, well, I had assignment. Where did the Y go? I mean, where did my, you know, that's not the time. And the slamming of compartment doors, you know, running around trying to find stuff, you should be able to put, if I asked you for something, you should be able to go, yep. And you should reach to this compartment open and grab it or whatever. So the training. And then, like you said, Terry and Scott, it's, you know, checking the rig, making sure you're comfortable on it, you know everything backwards and forwards. Now, before we can even talk about getting your crew safely to and from the incident, you have to know where the hell you're going. And if you don't know whether to turn left or right, you know, so if you're not into district familiarization and knowing, you know, where to go and this street feeds into this and these streets are one way and you know, there's alley and the, oh, we have all overhead wires in that section of town. They're all buried here. You know, I used to say it, you know, for those that, whether you're a fan of the Quint or not, you know, we could talk about another show. I think we have. I've said like the Quint operators, those drivers even have it more difficult because truck guys looking where to spot and set his jacks. You know, engine guys looking, you know, where am I getting my water from? Where am I going to put best advantage? I've only got, you know, again, if your primary line in your neighborhood is to stretch a pre-connect and you have 200 feet, well, you better make sure you're putting your rig in the right spot and so on and so forth. Like Terry said, leaving the front open for the truck. A Quint guy, you know, has to think on two fronts. You pull up in an apartment complex and you set the brake and Captain Thompson drags line, you charge a line. You can't go, hey, Cap, I got to shut it down to have to pull up because there's a tree in my way and there's a lady in a window, you know, on the third floor and I can't get it because you have to, you know, when you set your parking brake, you need to be able to set your jacks at the same time you put it in pump. So for those of you out there that are watching this and some listening to it, if you drive a Quint, you better have your act really together because you have to think on two fronts. But the district familiarization, I guess my question would be for those viewers out there, guys, you know, what's your department do to get your people dialed in and trained? And what do you, you know, district, you know, we don't want to drive it, it's a waste of fuel. I hate that comment. You know, we're going to wear the engines out. Fire engines, if they're designed right, are meant to be run hard and long and all that stuff, so on and so forth. So what are you doing to know your district? The rig checks. And if how many times have we been somewhere, Scott, you and I especially travel and teach it, and someone's showing you their pumper, and you go, oh, wow, that's cool, and you're looking at it and all that, and you go, all right, so, okay, inch and three quarters. I bet it's someplace of 2-inch. What kind of nozzle is that? Well, it's the double Fanguli straight, smooth, fog, upside down, backflow tamper switch nozzle. Okay, what's it flow? And that's what you hear. And one guy looks, well, it's 150. No, dude, it's 175. No, it's one. If you don't know how many bullets are coming out of your gun, you know, I mean, how do you not know what comes out of the end of your nozzle? You know, so knowing the flow, there's so much more. And then what are you doing for driver's training? You said it, Terry, you know, we get a guy that pulls up that just drove his Jeep or his Ford F-130 pickup truck. Now he's jumping in and at 7:01 can be running red lights and sirens through town with a pumper or a lot, whatever. I mean, you know, and for some of those in the rural areas that have a pump or tanker, I mean, we roll them all the time because, you know, they're running heavy one direction, you know, empty the other way. I mean, what are you doing to get your people trained? And then, Terry, you walk through the big one. Oh, my gosh. So you pull up now, you know, you've got so many different things and you're by yourself. And if something does get jammed up, Scott, you said, Paul, all of a sudden you lose water. You blow a main, whatever. You don't turn and say, hey, Chief Thompson, you know, or Cap, the main. No, you're like, they're in there fighting the fire, and now you have to scramble to figure out where you're getting your next water. You know, if you got good policies, your second engine's doing that anyway for you, or at least secured a second source. But that being said, I mean, this is more than just pulling levers, like you said, Paul. I mean, just, you know, I mean, it's knowing that rig backwards and forwards and everything else. So, I mean, let me ask you,